international detective dragons from outer space.
Welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam Five, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 28. The topic for this episode is Jason Gudesky, The 30 Theses, The Fifth World. We'll have Jason's letter, Frapper Map Talk, a letter from Derek, and more right after this.
Summer sun, the wind, the water, all make your hair dry as the desert. Your scalp becomes flaky. New Vitalis Hair Tonic with V7, the greaseless grooming discovery, stops summer dryness, keeps your hair neater all day. Vitalis gives your hair extraordinary protection from the ravages of sun, wind, and water. New laboratory findings show that even excessively dried out hair gets back its necessary moisture content faster with Vitalis than with any leading hair cream or hair oil. Yes, greaseless Vitalis with wonder-working V7 does wonders for your hair and for you, too. Get new Vitalis with V7.
Now then, top of the show, it's time to get Frapper News in. First of all, we have this response from Geek Beard after hearing episode 27.
Thanks for the hearty, though somewhat opaque, welcome, Adam Five. Your organic chemistry references both astound, offend, and fill my periphery with oddly spinning and colored discs. The latter isn't an unpleasant effect, but it can be annoying after a few hundred hours. Stop it, please. I need to revisit my instance of the non-collective collective dreamsville. Just listen to the most recent episode. Great work. Keep it up. I'm 96% hooked already.
Well, thank you, Geekbeard. I will admit, it was a very opaque welcome. Kind of strange. Tried to tie it into chocolate and insanity, and maybe it was a little bit too long-winded there. Not quite sure what the non-collective collective dreamsville is. I probably should know that and don't. But maybe you can send in an email response, or maybe an audio, to explain just exactly what you mean by that. Although you don't owe me an explanation, particularly since I tried to welcome you with references to chocolate-eating fungus. That wasn't very nice, I admit that. Sorry about that. But anyway, thank you. I'm glad you're 96% hooked. I hope I can make you 100% hooked. If not, at least make it enjoyable for you. To move on, a great big welcome, a bow of thanks, a handshake, and a hello to James Stubbs from Charlotte, North Carolina. James had this to say when he placed his pin.
Indignation is salvation.
Indignation is salvation. I'll admit to a certain degree of indignation about lots and lots of things. I'll also admit that I don't have a clear-cut definition of what salvation is. What is salvation? I invite anyone else that's at all curious about this to write in and let us know what their version is of salvation, including you, Mr. Stubbs. And again, thank you very much for joining the Frapper Map. This week's Frapper Map Elite Virtual Menu is Twinkies and pancakes. The two beverages are hot cocoa and classic green Gatorade. I can't help that, folks. That's just what they brought around. Also, I think you'll find that the combat unit that was defending the Psyche from episode 27 did a little bit of recovery and regrouping here on the veranda, and they left behind several unopened crates of wool blankets. So if it starts to get chilly out there, anyone who needs them, please feel free. So thank you, Geekbeard, and thank you, James Stubbs, for making the Frapper Map a more vibrant and richer collection of minds by adding you. Now, before I forget, I want to take a slice of the Kutikatingatangatungs I wrote for episode 27, or more accurately, a slice from episode 27 that never made it in. And I'll say aloud right now that I'd like you to look for the following interview. It's an interview with a philosopher named Richard Carney. I left a segment out of the last show by accident, and I really wanted it in there, but I'll put it in here instead, in true Billy Pilgrim-style podcasting. Here we go. I am so sheltered and ignorant of that kind of mindset, it defies my understanding completely. Now, I'm in complete agreement with Mr. T's assessment of the truly, truly evil acts, not being of religious origin, but from the abuse of religion and the false interpretation of religion. And I'm going to share with you a link. I'm going to put a link in the Kutikatingatangatungs to a podcast from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. The podcast series is called Ideas, the best of ideas, I think. And I would direct you to treat yourself, and I do mean treat yourself, because I think every one of you would enjoy this thoroughly, like a breath of fresh air. They're a three-part interview with a philosopher named Richard Carney. And he's got a cartload of fascinating ideas, not just about the interpretation of religion, but about what he calls a religion of imagination. And as you're listening to it, please keep in mind what Mr. T wrote. Also, try to keep in mind what Tracy Hickman had to say on the Roundtable podcast. Now, I couldn't possibly do justice to all the wonderful insights that this man had just by talking about it, but I highly, highly recommend and urge you to give this man a listen. Richard Carney, K-E-A-R-N-E-Y. Google it, you'll find it. It's terrific. Take my word for it. It is so worth it. And so, with that said, I'm now going to go off on an unwritten stream of consciousness. No, not stream of consciousness. It's just a story. I'm going to admit, folks, I'm trying to get episode 28 out rather quickly. I think mainly it's because, what's the nearest analogy? Let's say I'm in a canoe on a very calm part of the river, but I see up ahead that there are rocks and rapids and some really nasty going that aren't going to permit me to think straight for even a moment. And by that I mean the months of November and December are probably the two most stressful months in my life, or at least have been that way for quite a few years now. And I could go into detail about all of it, but I know I'm not alone in that. I know there's quite a few other people out there that experience the same thing. So I'm trying to get episode 28 out quickly, and that means not pre-writing a lot of what I have to say. I usually find it goes smoother, and I get more succinct, I get more to the point. I'm a little less tedious, but didn't have the time to do that now, so I'm just going to tell this story. What's the story? The story is about me getting a shot when I was 6 years old, when you get one of those little injections. And this is how I recall it. Our mom brought us to the doctor. I don't remember what neighborhood it was in, but it was some residential neighborhood where the doctor had his offices on the first floor of a house. And we went in, and I don't know what the shot was for either. I don't know whether it was a flu shot or whether it was, who knows? Maybe it was for rabies, who knows? But the operative thing there was a kid does not want to get a shot. And at 6 years old, I was no different. And doctors were no smarter then than they are now. What did this doctor say to me? This doctor said, it's not, you're not going to feel anything. It's no worse than a mosquito bite. You know what a six-year-old's view of a mosquito bite is? It's the cartoon view. It's the view of this horrible, awful little creature with great big jagged teeth chomping down onto the arm of its victim. It's the cartoon view of a mosquito bite. It's not the clinical, scientific, Discovery Channel close-up of a mosquito putting a tiny, tiny, tiny little proboscis into the layers of skin. No, it's the cartoon chomp. So you don't tell a six-year-old that it's not going to hurt any more than a mosquito bite. He'll freak out, like I did. He'll jump off the table, like I did. He'll run out of the front door and down the block and have to be chased after by his mother and picked up bodily and carried screaming back into the doctor's office like I was. Why am I telling a story like this? Well, first of all, it's true. It did happen. I recall it rather vividly. I did end up getting the shot. It hurt like hell because when you're six, your arm is really, really small and that needle is really, really big. Today, I could get a shot like nothing. I don't care. Like most adults, the shot really doesn't much hurt. You hardly feel it going in. When you're six, different story. But why am I telling it? It's because I feel like I'm having the same reaction to this whole fifth world situation, this whole Ishmael crash of civilization, never should have started farming situation. And I'm trying to get myself calmed down to the extent that at least, like Mick Bradley, I'm willing to look into it, learn more about it, allow the curiosity to take over, and allow some degree of calm and rational consideration of the subject to take over instead of this emotional response that pretty much permeates my view of this and distorts my view of this. So I'm trying, folks. And one of the things that helps is reading more about it. And I'm going to admit now I've got a lot more to read about it. And I'm going to recommend that same reading material to you. But first we're going to take a break. And after the break, I'm going to read a letter from Derek that ties directly into the subject. A very short response, a very short reply from Derek regarding the three episodes and a new thought that he had working on him that he wanted to share. And after that, I'll be reading the email response from Jason Gadeski, the founder of the Anthropic Network, or at least one of the founders, and the author of the 30 Theses that thoroughly investigate and thoroughly document the anthropology behind the ideas that inspired him to go into anthropology in the first place of Daniel Quinn, the author of Ishmael, and several other authors that have run parallel with Mr. Quinn. And so, back in a bit.
Oh, what a beautiful day for Frankenberry, the world's super sweet new cereal.
Phooey! Here's the world's super sweet new cereal, Count Chocula.
Biffo, I've got berry-flavored sweeties for monstrous strawberry flavor.
Well, I've got chocolate sweeties for monstrous chocolate flavor.
Frankenberry,
Count Chocula.
Meow.
Frankenberry, Count Chocula.
At the time, I was asleep in my electrified elephant hammock. When through the pigeonhole flew a carrier pigeon. There was something strapped to its leg. It was a postman.
A letter for you?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hurriedly, I tore open the letter. Inside was an envelope with a message that said...
So, now that you've been away, I'm hankering for some juicy thought talk from you. Hope things line up soon so you can get that new episode out. I'm very interested to know what it will be about. Also, further thoughts on some of the three-parter. Not to be a time hog, but I found this thought interesting, so here we go. Man developed civilization for the sake of itself. We looked out of our dark, dank caves, into the woods, saw what could be a house, and went from there. Since then, we've had the great opportunity to both feed and shelter ourselves, to a point that we can think and develop enough ideas that we can question our own actions, including the decision to start storing food and the like. However, in Weird Like Us, My Bohemian America, by Ann Powers, she presents this. In 1983, the poet Lewis Hyde, that in examining various cultural traditions, myths, and works of literature, he concluded that gifts are not like other objects we acquire. They are anarchist property, resistant to permanent ownership. They gain worth only if the spirit of giving, if not the actual objects, keeps moving. In the Native American potlatch, one tribal chief may receive 20 cords of pine from another, but his wealth is only confirmed when he gives back 100 pounds of salmon. So, my thought continues, if we as civilized people are merely halfway to the point of true wisdom, where we will reject all that we have held dear for so long and return to the woods to live in peace with our world, perhaps the gift is our way of turning our capitalism and materialistic natures into something more useful. It is how we will truly become wealthy and obtain wisdom, moving us one more step along our species' path to group enlightenment. I hope you are staying well as the holiday season creeps up on us like a purse snatcher. Yes, you, listening in, this means you. Best of days, Derek.
Thank you very much once again, Derek, for writing in and sharing yet another new idea that relates, of course, directly to this increasingly upsetting subject of the fourth world and our impending doom. On that note, I can only respond with a small portion, a little piece of one of Jason Gadeski's 30 theses. That would be number 10, entitled Emergent Elites Led the Agricultural Revolution. I'm selecting this one small portion from it. It's a paragraph. It's not long. Because what you described resonated, for me at least, with this one particular piece. The first portion of it goes into the history and the derivation of the term big men or big man, which was not so much a chief or a leader, but actually the impression I'm getting is that this is a kind of a tribal cheerleader who spends most of his time going around helping other people and lending them all kinds of stuff and gaining social influence rather than actual material wealth or power. But I'm going to quote directly the second half of the paragraph, pretty much.
Through an elaborate system of loans, big men are able to collect large amounts of food together at a single time for competitive feasting. New Guinea big men, for example, could never raise a sufficient number of pigs for an acceptable mocha.
I think mocha in this term is a term for one of those competitive feasts.
They do keep significant herds of their own, but they constantly lend those pigs to others, as well as lending their time and labor. Then, when the time comes for a mocha, they collect on all those debts at once, amassing an amount of resources they never could have gathered themselves. In this way, big men use generosity and gratitude to co-opt an entire community for their own purposes. Rather than accumulating wealth, big men might rather be seen as a conduit of wealth, as the big man economy becomes, essentially, redistributive.
Now, I'm going to admit, I haven't read all of thesis number 10. As a matter of fact, I haven't read all of the theses yet, and I'm going to. But I do find it a little bit distressing that the direction your thought took you in, as far as I can tell, is essentially banging a U-turn back into civilization. I could be absolutely and completely wrong on this. If you care to elaborate, that's fine. Please do write back. And I think I get the gist of what you were trying to say in your letter, and it is an interesting idea. But I do find it a little bit distressing that, taken totally out of context, what I just read seems to indicate the beginnings of an agricultural revolution anyway. But I do thank you.
It's a stampede. They're in trouble. Will they escape? It's up to you with The Best of the West by Marx. Rush Captain Maddox to the rescue, along with General Custer. Who started it? Ferocious Chief Geronimo on his horse Comanche. And there's Johnny West with his horse Thunderbolt. Jay West drives the buckboard with his sister Janice, while his twin brother, Riding Poncho,
fires to turn the herd. There's Jane West. Can she control the covered wagon? The stampede is getting closer. Will Jane and Janice escape? It's up to you. You're the boss of the Wild West with your Best of the West collection. Each figure complete with up to 31 pieces of authentic gear. And look how you can pose Comanche. Get the Best of the West by Marks.
All right, then. Now, before reading Mr. Gadeski's letter, I want to just give a brief roundup, a quick synopsis of how IDDFOS got to this point and got so heavily involved in this particular subject. Let's start. Where did it start? Where's the beginning? As far as this podcast is concerned, it started with International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, episode number one. And in that episode, I asked this question.
Question: do you believe that the human race is a natural part of the Earth and belongs here? Perhaps as a variation of that, do you believe that the human race began as a natural part of the Earth and mutated into something, a species, that does not belong here?
All right, then. Now, that was back in April. It's 2006. That was back in April. And then I posed the question formally as a subject, as a topic for episode 22. And the response that I got was so in-depth. And part of that response was a recommendation from Derek from Texas to read the book Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. And after doing so, and after examining more of the responses, it prompted a full 3-episode treatment of the subject. Part of that treatment was made more in-depth and richer by material that was found by Mick Bradley. Mick Bradley recalled hearing Jeff from Gamer the Podcasting talking about the Game Master, or the Dungeon Master, the GM, as a shaman, the concept of meeting someone at a con who was talking about the GM as shaman. Mick Bradley spurred Mick Bradley into a Google search, and he discovered for himself and for us, because he was good enough to share that link with me, The Fifth World, the Anthropic Network, which was founded on the ideas of Daniel Quinn, and among those founders was Mr. Jason Gadeski. And in mentioning The Fifth World and discussing the book Ishmael, Jason was kind enough to write this incredible email to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. He writes,
"I see I'm a little late to respond to this, but it was only yesterday that I learned you'd made mention of The Fifth World on your show from Mick Bradley. Just in case synchronicity wasn't enough for you, as my wife shouted in response, the Kurt Vonnegut novel you were thinking of was Cat's Cradle, and the substance was Ice Nine. This was immediately evident to her because Cat's Cradle is one of her favorite novels, so much so that she took the screen name Ice Nine on an online forum dedicated to Daniel Quinn's Ishmael, which is where we originally met. So round and round we go. Thank you for making mention of The Fifth World. And I want to say that I shared your emotional reaction to the telepathic gorilla when I first read Ishmael as well. I rebelled against it. I didn't want it to be true. I went to college and majored in anthropology, looking for the evidence that this was just a dumb gorilla. I didn't find any. Instead, I just found more and more evidence that he was right. I expounded the topic at length in The 30 Theses, which I'm currently editing into a book. You asked, haven't we accomplished just a little worth being proud of? I'd say yes, but I don't think it's anything so petty as putting a man on the moon or projecting talkies through the air. It increasingly seems to me that the most amazing things we accomplished were the things we started in the Upper Paleolithic, the means of creating communities and sharing myths and meaning with one another, art, music, religion, philosophy. the ecstatic experience of the living world, our relationships with the living communities we are enmeshed in. As our society's complexity has increased, we've lost all that. As I show in the 30 Theses, civilization has given us oppression, rulers, laws, disease, and violence, where previously such things had been rare to non-existent. We pride ourselves on the conceit that in return we have better medicine, better art, or more knowledge. But as I show in the 30 Theses, this simply isn't true. None of these are any better in civilization than what we have before. All of this complexity serves only one end. It allows a small group of elites to control large populations of subjects. Everything else is something we sacrifice to have that. The term noble savage emerged originally when Europeans noted that hunter-gatherers lived very much like European kings, with similar diets, similar freedoms, similar health, and similar longevity. Even today, the prosperity of the First World, bought in so many different ways at the cost of the Third World suffering, only approaches the quality of life of foragers. Can such a system really be expected to go on? That's what inspired me to start the Fifth World, and what I hope to relate to others in it. We are all too often bound into this Hobbesian myth of the forager's life as nasty, brutish, and short, despite all evidence to the contrary. I began by iterating the evidence in the 30 Theses, but quickly learned that was insufficient. This is an emotional matter. I reacted to Ishmael emotionally, just as you did, and I think most people will never consider the possibility of what could wait for us beyond civilization on an intellectual level. We need to feel it. We need a myth. That's what we're trying to weave with the Fifth World, a mythic vision of what humanity could be if we could stop masturbating over all our flashy toys and try to cultivate all those things that are really important, that we've neglected for so long. Where did we go wrong? When we ate from the tree of knowledge and imagined ourselves capable of judging right from wrong, able to sit in judgment over our own case. When we got wrapped up in the magic of our own alphabet and stopped listening to anyone but ourselves, as David Abram explained so powerfully in Spell of the Sensuous. When we enshrined our rational faculties above our mythic faculties and lost all sense of balance within ourselves, much less balance between our human communities and the non-human communities we live with. What else could we have done? We could have stayed where we were. Life isn't about any kind of progress. Progress is only a goal when where you're at is unsatisfactory. That's why civilized folk are forever going on and on about progress. But you'll barely ever hear a forager mention the word. There is no goal or perfection to run to. If there's anything ecology has taught us, it's that life in this world is about the relationships. In imagining ourselves to be such gods aloof from the living world, we've done great harm to the world, and even greater harm to ourselves. As Abram discusses in the book I mentioned, without other non-human voices to enrich our discussion, our relationships between ourselves is diminished. We are driving forward the most destructive mass extinction in the history of this planet, but it's not out of malice. And it's not out of any kind of inherently destructive nature. It's sheer obliviousness. We weren't always so oblivious. There was a time when our lives were enriched by non-human voices, when we appreciated the intricate web of relationship that we lived in, that nurtured us and fed us. There are places in the world where people still live that way. In a way, the closest comparison might be to cancer. Cancerous cells strip away the telomere and then functioning DNA. That leaves them with a different genetic sequence, so they can no longer recognize themselves as part of the body. They don't set out to destroy their organism, they're just oblivious to it. They grow without limit because they don't recognize that they're part of a larger whole. Civilized people do not recognize that they're part of a larger whole. We grow without limit and threaten our own extinction not out of malice, but out of ignorance. What can we do about it? Remember. Remember our place in the world. Remember how to listen to the non-human communities around us. Remember that relationships are more important than toys. Remember that community is all there really is in this world. Remember that we once knew how to live in the world. And that means we can do it again, anytime we like, if ever we'd be willing to lay down our weapons and stop our ceaseless war on everything that lives. I hope the Fifth World is part of that. My greatest hope, my greatest ambition, is that it might be a myth powerful enough to remind us and strike the emotional chords that intellectual facts never could, to remind us what it's like to be human. Maybe we'll even remember that it's a good thing, and drop this ambition civilizations nursed in our hearts, telling us how fallen we are, and promising how this technology or that religion will help us to transcend our human nature and become something better. Maybe we'll take pride in being human again, and remember that so long as we're treated the way humans were designed to be treated, we're a great species, and can bring a lot to the grand, shimmering web of relationships that make up everything in this world that's good and hopeful and worth fighting for. Jason Gadeski.
Mr. Gadeski, I can't begin to say how impressed I am, not only by the eloquence of your letter, but by the depth and the quantity of information you distill in the 30 theses. Now, it's more than obvious that you've leaped over the Annum 5 method of contemplation, which is to sit by the side of the road twiddling my mental thumbs and wondering just what it's all about. You've taken the active journey toward discovering a truth that you wanted to deny, and you brought out of that a body of knowledge and well-researched conclusions that should not only ensure a landmark publication when your book is completed, but earn you the respect of anyone rational enough to pay attention to what you've written. And I thank you for that work, and I thank you for the email response you've written. Now, I've often used the phrase on this podcast, I've often used the phrase, the springboard of my own ignorance. And it generally, what that means for me, anyway, is that I'm approaching a question with little to no true knowledge of the possible answers, or even if the question makes sense to ask. And in this case, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. There are any number of questions that I could start with in response to your email, but all of them are going to have to wait until I've read your 30 theses. I haven't fully read all of them. It's quite a body of work. I imagine your time is limited, too. I've already gone into the time constraint woes that I share with lots of other people. And so I'm going to first read and try to thoroughly understand the 30 theses and come back to this. I'm going to leapfrog, I think, episode 29. Episode 29 is going to consist of emails that I've received in response to episode 27. You want to talk about Billy Pilgrim being unstuck in time? Well, I'm unstuck in subject matter and podcast topics per show. Episode 27, the last episode, was the extensive exploration and ideas brought forward by Mr. T, the Norwegian Viking, and I received email responses regarding that from Kurt, the camera guy, and from Sharon of the Frapper Map, and both of those will be read and examined in episode 29. In episode 30, I'm going to come back to the topic of the Fifth World, the topic of the 30 theses, which could not possibly be covered in one podcast. And anyone that has looked into and examined the ideas that you've so thoroughly researched and have built this Fifth World project, the role-playing game, the open-source role-playing game, the effort to make a collective new myth for the post-collapse culture, I would invite to write in and please share your ideas as well, so that they can be brought out in episode 30. Now, I'm going to share a cheat with anyone listening. This may be old news for some people. This may be something you've been doing for quite some time, but it's something that I do when I've got a large amount of text to read and not a lot of time to do it. This is something that I was doing for a while with the classics. Years and years ago, I went to a site called nextup.com, nextup.com, and purchased a piece of software called Text to MP3. And what it does is takes a text file and reads it into an MP3 sound file. Now, this site it's not free, unfortunately. They do charge for the software, but I found it so worth it. What I used to do was take classics from Project Gutenberg, works of Twain or Sir Arthur Conan Doyle or anybody that I wanted to read, and I would break those text files up into 3 or 4 page chunks. I'd feed it into this text to MP3 file maker, and burn it onto CD and listen to it, because it would read it with an artificial voice, but not a bad sounding artificial voice. As a matter of fact, here's an example of it.
Humans are social animals, and also capable of abstract, independent thought. The combination requires some form of social standards.
So what I've done actually is I've already created the MP3 files of the 30 theses, and I'm going to be listening to them probably a few times, but it'll afford me the opportunity to concentrate on what it is you're trying to get across in each and every one of them, because I can listen to them repeatedly. Very often at work, I'm engaged in activity that allows me to do that, so I will have hours on end at work to be able to do that, depending on what situation I'm in. Occasionally, though, I have to put it aside because I can't do database queries while listening to MP3s. But I can climb up and down ladders putting away giant dragon heads and fake wheels of cheese while listening to MP3s. Anybody interested in giving this a try, again, the site is nextup.com. That particular voice snippet was called Audrey. But I imagine they have quite a few different voices to choose from, depending on who the synthesis company is that's making the voices.
Truth is stranger than fiction, and this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
George Washington, during his entire 2 terms as President of the United States, refused to shake hands. He always bowed in the belief that a handshake was beneath the dignity of a president, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the most considerate uncle. Richard Dawson of Bradley, England, was probably the most considerate uncle in history. He was a very large man, so on his deathbed, he worried that his 300-pound body would be an inconvenience to his frail nephew after he died. So, to spare his nephew the trouble, Dawson walked out to the garden where he dug his own grave. After he had finished digging, he laid down in the grave and he died, believe it or not.
Follow the Path, the Bear's Grove podcast. Adult-level discussion of role-playing as a storytelling art at bearsgrove.com.
I don't have an appropriate old-time radio show for this particular episode. I'm going to admit flat out, I just don't. And so I'm just going to throw the dart at the page in the phone book and see what name pops up. Ah, here we go. Hammer. The name is Hammer. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the Fifth World. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the collapse of civilization, agriculture, or anything like that. It has to do with the film noir detective. It has to do with the private eye, the gumshoe, the urban tough guy, the fellow that can take a slug, bind up his ribs, go find the bad guys, and beat him up. The impossible fictional character. So here is 3 minutes, actually 2 minutes and 48 seconds, of Mickey Spillane's That Hammer Guy from 1953. And that episode in its entirety is 27 minutes long, and it's yours to download as this week's old-time radio genre nugget, with my thanks for giving it a try. Please enjoy this.
The number one selling mystery character in all fiction is on the air. The hard-hitting private eye, Mike Hammer, in the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy. The makers of Kix, tasty, crispy corn puffs, food for action. And the makers of mild, flavorful Camels, America's most popular cigarette. And the publishers of Esquire magazine, in cooperation with the Mutual Broadcasting System, present That Hammer Guy, a new suspense series transcribed based on Mickey Spillane's fabulous Mike Hammer. More than 20 million readers have thrilled to his exciting books. In just a moment, you'll meet in person Mickey Spillane's That Hammer Guy. Here's the shocking truth. The truth about the growing immorality in the United States. May Esquire's revealing expose, Call Girls and Fall Guys, reports that millions of Americans would end up behind prison bars if it were possible to enforce all the laws on sex. Yes, it's the truth, now told in a way you've never heard before. And it's in the current issue of Esquire. Here are the startling facts. Each year, both you and the government are cheated by those who would use immorality as an income tax deduction. And loose money is buying loose morals in a way that threatens your very way of life. May Esquire reveals the carefully hidden secrets of New York and Hollywood's Romeos and Juliets. Don't miss Call Girls and Fall Guys in the May issue of Esquire, on your newsstand now. And now, here is Larry Haynes in the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy.
You've been prowling the town like a happy tomcat with a night full of delicatessen garbage cans. But by the time dawn rolls around, you've got that washed-out grave feeling. So you turn in at the nearest glorified flop house and hit up the sleepy room clerk for a berth.
Here's the key, room 500. Someone just checked out. You're lucky. Any special service you want?
All you want is sleep. So you crawl in the sack like a bear who's finally found its winter cave. But just when you settle down to hibernate, the knocking starts. Keep your shirt on. Okay, okay, I'm coming. Yeah, what is it?
Now then, folks, if you will forgive me, I'm not going to be... I haven't got a lot of commentary. First of all, how could I follow a letter like that? What could I possibly say after that... What could I possibly say after that skilled and deeply insightful response to the episodes done regarding humanity's place in nature? I certainly don't want to comment on it until I've read Mr. Gadeski's body of work. Or at least listen to it, as I said. And so I'm going to close out episode 28. I'm not sure how long this show is going to be. I'm giving myself the impression it's going to be slightly shorter than most of the other episodes. That's not such a bad thing, actually. They've been going a bit long lately, and it couldn't hurt to have something short. I hope that's what this one ended up. Not going to be that way if I keep jabbering like this, though. So how about some music? And on the opposite side of the music, I'll be saying my goodbyes. Please enjoy this Rachmaninoff. And so we reach the end of episode 28. It did not end up being the in-depth examination and response to Mr. Gadeski's letter that I wanted it to be, primarily because I find myself too ignorant to respond appropriately. I find myself too bankrupt of the facts that I should have, or at least the concepts that I should be familiar with before asking anything or responding to anything. And so, as I said, episode 30, I'm going to attempt probably to look at least one or two of the ideas put forth in the 30 theses, because they're extensive enough. And in episode 29, we'll cover the responses to episode 27. It's gotten so convoluted. I do apologize for that, but we're getting into the holidays. We can be cavalier about it. We can take a freewheeling Marx Brothers approach to scheduling and talk about anything. Or not. Thank you. Thank you once again, Jason Gadeski, for writing the letter. Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Sharon and Kurt, the camera guy, for your email input. Unfortunately, it does have to wait an episode, but thank you very much anyway. And thank you for listening to episode 28. I hope you'll be back for episode 29. That's the episode in which I will be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well for you, and best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.